Of the four airliners hijacked on September 11th, 2001, two hit the World Trade Center towers, one hit the Pentagon, and one, United Airlines Flight 93, crashed in Pennsylvania. The passengers on that flight from Newark to San Francisco attempted to seize control of the plane back from the hijackers. We don't know the details of what happened in that struggle, but just about everything we do know about United Flight 93 is in Jeri Longman's new book, Among the Heroes. Mr. Longman is a New York Times reporter who covered the crash in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and joins us from New York. Jeri Longman, first, the timing of this flight. It was delayed.
The flight was scheduled to take off at 8:01 on September 11th from New York to San Francisco, but because of the usual delays in the airports in New York City, it took off at 8:42, 40 minutes late.
That's significant because by that time, it was clear to people that there already had been hijackings out of Boston.
Right. At 8:24, a voice thought to be that of the terrorist Mohammed Atta aboard American Flight 11 was overheard telling the passengers, "We have some planes. Just stay quiet. You will be okay. We are returning to the airport." 10 minutes later, one of the hijackers, perhaps Atta, said, "Nobody move, please. We're going back to the airport. Don't try to make any stupid moves." And that's significant because some of the family members of Flight 93 want to know that, well, if they knew 18 minutes ahead of time that there was a hijacking of a plane, why was Flight 93 and any other plane allowed to take off at 8:42?
And the answer is?
The answer is that there was just so, I think, so much confusion at the time that the people in Newark apparently just never became aware that there was a hijacking.
Well, we don't know in the end where Flight 93 would have been at what time if it had taken off on schedule, but as it was, it meant that with air phones and cell phones in the cabin, people on board became aware that not only was their plane hijacked, but other planes had been hijacked and crashed into the World Trade Center towers.
Right. The United Flight 93 went all the way to Cleveland before it turned around, and we're not quite sure why that was, whether it was some pre-timed destination to turn or whether there was something as mundane as waiting for the food carts to be cleared from the aisles before they attempted to take over the plane. But that timing gave the passengers aboard the plane two things that the passengers did not have in the other three flights, which was time and knowledge that there were other hijackings.
How many calls do you estimate there were between people on board Flight 93 and people on the ground somewhere?
Well, GTE, which manufactures the airphones, said there were at least 24 calls made from their airphones. And then we know that some cell phone calls were made as well. So, you know, probably between 24 at least.
You report that at least according to a prosecutor, and indeed the prosecutor who would bring the case against Zacharias Moussaoui, the passengers advanced into the cockpit using a food cart as their shield. That's how they came down the aisle.
Right. When the families in April were allowed to hear the voice recorder and to see a transcript of the voice recorder, they were told by a prosecutor in the Moussaoui case that it's his theory that they did advance into the cockpit using a food cart as a battering ram. And it's unclear what happened. If they did indeed get into the cockpit, it remains unclear. Were they actually able to take over the control of the plane? Did it crash in the chaos of the moment? Did the hijackers drive it into the ground on purpose? That's still unknown.
Well, I wonder if you would read for us your description based on what the families were told and what they heard or read in transcripts of what was going on and what was recorded in the cockpit of Flight 93.
Sure. In the final minutes of the flight, the voice recorder picked up a desperate commotion, a feral struggle, rustling and scuffling, grunting, a groan, shouts in English and Arabic, the sound of crashing dishes and breaking glass. The crashing sounds could have come as passengers hurled plates and glasses, or as the dishes fell from a meal cart when the plane's wings began rocking, officials said. At 9:58, the final battle for control of the plane began. The passengers were coming, trying to get into the cockpit, the hijackers said, admonishing each other to hold the door. "In the cockpit," was shouted in English. A thumping sound could be heard. A male voice screamed, perhaps as one of the hijackers was overtaken. "Hold," was screamed in English. To some, it sounded as if the passengers were saying this in unison. "Stop him," someone shouted. "Let's get them," one of the passengers yelled. "Cockpit," was yelled again in English. "If they didn't do this," one passenger said in garbled words, "we'll die." The hijackers could be heard praying, "God is great." Desperate, one of the terrorists urged that the oxygen supply to the cabin be turned off. This would have had little or no effect on the passengers below 10,000 feet, aviation officials said. One of the hijackers spoke about finishing off the flight, though the transcript suggested he could have been referring to the woman who had pleaded earlier for her life. Not yet, another terrorist cautioned. Near the end of the tape, muted voices seemed to grow louder, closer. The scuffling continued. I'm injured, someone said in English. More shouting. Roll it and pull it up, or lift it up, or turn up. A final rushing sound could be heard, and about 3 minutes after 10, the tape went silent.
Which do you think is the case, that what made the passengers on Flight 93 charge the cockpit and struggle to at least take control away from the hijackers, did they do that because they had the knowledge of what was going on, and from all of their phone calls, they, unlike anyone else, knew what was happening with the other hijackings? Or do you think that there was just something special about these personalities whom you've written about so much and you've come to know about, that they behaved because of who they were?
I think the answer is probably both. I mean, they did have the time and the knowledge to act, whereas the passengers on the other flights didn't. And I think they were a remarkable group of people. They were, you know, type A personalities, people who had been very successful in their lives, their professional lives. You had a lot of people with a lot of varied skills. It was a passenger named Donald Green who had a pilot's license, a man named Andrew Garcia who had trained as an air traffic controller. You had three women, Linda Gronlund, Lauren Grancolis, Jean Peterson, who were emergency medical technicians. Had a man named Richard Guadagno, who was a federal agent and ran a wildlife and fisheries refuge in Northern California, and had you know, close quarter combat training and even some hijacker training. One of the flight attendants, C.C. Lyles, was a former policewoman. You had several passengers who had martial arts training. You had Jean Peterson and Don Peterson, her husband, were crisis counselors. You had a lot of people who had been trained to be calm in times of stress, which I think, you know, aided their ability to be relatively calm and to carry out their plan. I heard taped telephone calls from the plane from Lauren Grancolis and C.C. Lyles, and I was struck by the complete lack of panic in their voices. There was some urgency, but there was no panic at all.
Well, Jerry Longman, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Jerry Longman is the author of Among the Heroes, United Flight 93, and the Passengers and Crew Who Fought Back.